Hey guys, welcome back to Portrait Session. This week we're going to be talking about the biggest mistakes that photographers make. And to help me talk about that, we have Mr. Connor Hibbs. How's it going, man?
Oh, it's going really well, dude. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I have a new desk. So I took the plunge and I bought a new desk, which, like, if you get like a custom one where you like tell them what you want, it's like buying a new camera body. It can be really expensive. But I got
it. Is that what you did?
Yeah, kind of. I went into like one of the, it's called Total Office Concepts, and you can go in and say, okay, I want that top. And I got a sit stand desk, which is really cool because I sit down way too much. So now I can like raise my desk up and stand and work for a while, which will hopefully be a little bit better for the calorie burning on my end. But thing is huge. It's like 72 inches wide. I can't even reach both ends, and it gives me plenty of room, and got some matching shelving for all my camera gear. So I'm excited. Although I've got a huge mess in my office that I have to clean up now.
Totally. You'll have to tell me if you actually end up using the sit and stand feature a lot. I'm always interested to see how much that is actually being put to use when people go for a sit stand. But I mean, it's something I've looked into before and realized I pay like $40 for a desk normally. So the pricing on sit stand desks tends to be a little bit on the steep end from what I'm typically wanting.
Yeah, exactly. But my goal is I'm going to like put a little notification on my phone, and when it goes off, I'll raise my desk up for a while.
Oh, that's smart.
And even if I like, you know, work that way for 45 minutes or something, that's going to be 45 minutes that I would have been sitting anyway. So it should be a good thing, I would think.
Yeah. See, I would be interested. I've never tried doing any kind of like retouching while standing up.
Yeah.
And I would be really interested to see how well that works, because I know I tend to have horrible posture when I retouch. I start out very nice and straight.
Pretty soon you're kind of like laying down on the desk.
Yeah. Like arm on my face, or like hand on my face, head resting on there, or I'll hunch over and look at the details, and I could just zoom with my screen because I'm just like, oh, it's better this, whatever. For whatever reason, I just end up getting hunched over and like, yeah. So I'd be interested to see how retouching works standing up.
Yeah. So I'll report back. I'll see if I can actually edit properly standing up. I've never done it, so I don't know.
Yeah.
So this week we wanted to talk about like some of the most common problems we see either with like other people's post-processing of their portraits, or just compositional things, or like the actual act of shooting. I know that like I just got done teaching this photography workshop in the Columbia River Gorge, and we were out there shooting landscape photography with all these really beautiful sunflowers just carpeting this area, overlooking the Columbia River Gorge. And we're out there, we're setting up for sunset, and this girl came up and she was doing this engagement shoot with this couple, and I was like, oh, that's cool, what a beautiful place to do it. And then I watched her set up her light, and Mr. Judgmental photographer version of Nick came out, and she had set up her light. She was probably standing 20 feet away from the couple. She had her light probably 25 feet away from the couple, like 5 feet behind her and off to the left. And so it, you know, anytime your light is that far away, you're basically shrinking your light source, and you're turning that back up into like a tiny little pop-up flash. You might as well be using a bare flash at that point because you're so far away. And she had it, probably had it in ETTL, because the flash had been zoomed and I could tell that it was only, you know, it was not filling up her little softbox.
Yeah.
Not only was she getting a very flat, very direct light because it wasn't off to a side, but she was getting a very harsh light because it was so far away that it, you know, really wasn't doing a whole lot as far as you want to get your light source close. So
yeah,
thing number one is get your light close enough to where you're getting nice fall off and you're getting a nice large light source.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And that's one of those things that I see all the time. Like, you know, when you're doing your first flash setups, you know, the tendency is to not get your light close enough. So snuggle that light in as close as you can without it being in your frame, and you're going to get better light.
Totally. And I actually have an instance of seeing somebody do the same thing this past week, which was really frustrating. The most frustrating thing for me was he was clearly just using it as fill for shadows. So he was using mostly ambient light and then just popping with a little bit of light, which is a way to use your speed light. There's nothing necessarily or inherently wrong about that, having it a little bit further away. If you're just looking to fill in some shadows a little bit, like the angle that he had it at was wrong. It it was shooting very low up on the subjects that were already kind of short. So considering placement of your lighting is something to definitely keep in mind, not just the distance, but also your height. You want to make sure that you're at least at eye level. In general, I would say at least top of the head pointed downwards a little bit on this subject, because otherwise any shadows that do get cast kind of rake sideways across the face, or worst case scenario, if you're shooting up on them, the light cast shadows up their face, which just looks like spooky.
Exactly. You know, the sitting around the campfire telling scary stories light. And the reason for that is because, like, we walk around all day long and the sun is up in the sky. Light is and then we go in the house and lights are up in the ceiling, and we get really used to how the human face looks with light coming down. And when you light it in a different way, it takes on this spooky thing. Like, we're not used to seeing the human face with a weird light direction like that. So yeah, light direction big time. Like, and you know, that goes, even when you do get your light source close, you got to have it kind of high shooting down. You want to have it above eye level, just so it's a, you know, a flattering look. You don't want to come away with creepy kids.
And a warning with that there is to make sure that you are not shooting way above them either. I've seen that mistake happen as well, where somebody has, you know, a 9 foot stand. So they have the stand up at like 7.5, 8 feet shooting down on the subject, and doing that will cause really harsh shadows underneath the nose and in the eye sockets, and make them look very skeletal and also spooky in a certain kind of way in the photos. So having it just a little bit above their head is right around where you want to keep it. I also want to tag on to what you were saying there, Nick, with making sure that you have a nice, the light close enough to the person that it's creating a nice quality of light. Something to keep in mind is that the closer you get the light to the subject, the more rapid your fall off is going to be. So the faster it's going to move to darkness. So something that I had somebody, not making a mistake, but asking me about the other day was, well, what do you do when you're trying to shoot full body portraits? And the thing that you do there is make sure that you have a bigger modifier if you have one and you're looking for soft quality light. But if you don't, just back the light off a little bit more. Sure, it's going to get harder. It's not going to look as pretty and wrapping, but at least that way your fall off is a little bit more gradual and you can light the full body of the portrait if that's what you want. So paying attention to the way that fall off works in relation to how close or far the light modifier is another important factor to keep in mind. I've seen people that are trying to shoot full body stuff with a beautiful long dress where all of the interest of the dress is down below the waist level where it gets all flowy and lacy. And then they have a light that's so close that they're clearly not getting any of the beautiful details of the dress. They're lighting the head and shoulders and top part of the body, but then the bottom part is obviously going to be falling off so dark that it's not going to really have the kind of effect that they're looking for. So that's a mistake on the other side of that I see, is make sure that you're paying attention to how close you are in relation to how fall off.
It totally depends on the kind of look that you're going for in that situation. Like, a lot of times I really like that dramatic fall off. So tagging on to that, I think we're just going to wing this whole episode, but I think we can do it. Tagging on to that, make sure that your pose and your facial expressions match the lighting setup that you have.
Yeah.
So, like, a lot of times I like to do that dramatic light, right? But if I'm doing a senior portrait and I set up this really dramatic light with this dramatic sunset, it doesn't make any sense really to have like the big cheesy hi mom smile, you know, like, and make sure or vice versa, like to do the really moody, like staring down the camera look with bright, happy light. It just some can sometimes work, but the reverse never works with a dramatic light and a big cheesy smile. So make sure that your poses and your facial expressions match whatever kind of light setup you have, because it just looks weird when it doesn't.
And something to say there is, just from doing the best job that you can, because you're wanting to make sure that you match things up, make sure that you have at least a little bit of familiarity with your client before you shoot them. Because I've definitely made plans for shoots before where I had plans for everything to be very light and airy and not using a lot of flash, and then I talk to the person and they're very reserved and very stoic, and you know, doing something a little bit more edgy and dramatic would probably work more for their personality type. So not knowing your client is another mistake that I'm going to tag onto your tag onto my tag.
We'll see how long we can do this. But knowing your client absolutely matters, because especially I always refer it back to senior portraits or weddings, but with senior portraits, a lot of times you have like several different directions you can go, and you always want to incorporate like their personality into the photos, or at least like what they're into the photos. And
And
so like, I like to sit down and have a conversation with them beforehand saying, hey, you know, are you more of like an outdoorsy kind of person, or do you like, and more urban, like, do you want, and you, just by talking to them about like, okay, what kind of music do you listen to? Yeah. Just that can give you ideas. Cause obviously if they're, you know, listening to country all the time, they're probably not going to be cool with like a bunch of shots and done in an alley, you know, do it all like, you know, all urban and stuff. So, getting a feel for how they are and like what they're into totally makes a huge difference.
Totally. I know that last year I talked about having a session with a kid where I made the mistake of asking if he wanted something that was more outdoorsy or urban in the shoot, and he picked something outdoorsy. And then when I was there on the shoot talking with him, I was like, oh, so do you go hiking a lot? Do you like being outside? No. So what do? Oh, I just like sit inside and play video games a lot. And I'm like, oh, okay. Then I totally did not do you a service by
Photos are not going to reflect your personality at all.
Your personality at all. But I mean, it was also one of those senior sessions where his mom made him wear like a dress shirt and pants, and that was his only outfit that he had. And it's like, this is clearly not you as a person. It's to look nice. So it was whatever. That was a number of missteps that I made. And yeah, make sure that you're actually relating to the person and not just like asking what they would like when realistically they might not know why they want one thing or another.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So getting back to my engagement shoot that I witnessed, another thing that is very fresh in my mind because it annoyed the crap out of me when it happened was we were there. She was probably there doing this engagement session for a solid 45 minutes. She set up in one spot and got her light set up. She never once moved her light. And she never once moved her couple anywhere. I mean, we were in this beautiful area with like scenic overlooks and cliffs and tons of flowers. And she stood them in one place and did every single pose that she had ever seen on Pinterest. And so they have like, and she didn't even get closer. She didn't do tight shots and loose shots. She just shot like full body for every single pose for 45 minutes and didn't get any variety at all. So what I want to stress is you kind of have to try to get a variety during your photo sessions. Like not only with, the location, like obviously move around and get them a variety of photos. That way they don't have just a whole bunch of poses from one place, but also experiment with getting close shots and loose shots and get some that are like tight and a little bit more like almost abstract, you know?
Yeah.
And some that are just like faces and then some that are full body. When you have a variety, you can use them a whole bunch of different ways and a whole bunch of different times. If you have all the same, like you pretty much are just going to be able to use them once and then people have seen it. So shoot a variety, deliver a variety. That also for me, like in my sessions, I try to do that also with a style a little bit. I like to try to give them a kind of a diverse style because a lot of times you don't really know what they're going to love and hate. Well, hopefully they won't hate it, but you don't know what they're going to gravitate towards until after you deliver. So I try to do, you know, some with dramatic light and moody light and some with bright, happy and airy and kind of deliver a variety. That way there's something in there for everybody and hopefully they'll be happy with something because I delivered a variety.
I think that is a great point. In fact, that reminded me of a particular session that I had last year in which everything that I had talked about, it was a senior portrait session and the senior clearly wanted stuff that was on the dramatic side and it seemed to fit her very well. But the cloud cover was really interesting and the light in general was beautiful. And I remember I was shooting stuff with flash and then every once in a while I'd go, maybe I should try shooting this just natural light and see what happens. So I'd pull the flash away, using pretty much the same kind of composition and just you change your settings a little bit. Instead of slightly underexposing for the ambient light, you need to expose properly for the ambient light. And it ended up that she and her mom picked everything that they bought from me was of that natural light variety. Mm-hmm. So it really can make a difference. I'm not saying you necessarily need to go in with a game plan to do both things, but just keeping in mind that going from shooting with lighting to shooting very natural light and airy stuff, it's pretty simple to hop between the two of them, especially if you've already set up for lighting and are shooting that way. And then you go, okay, like, let's just open up real quick, turn off the light and shoot some ambient light exposure stuff. Yeah, I don't, that thought is gone from my mind. And I had something else I was going to say, and now I don't remember what it was because you said something else that was beautiful. Oh, it was about moving around. Yeah, so something that I constantly get told whenever I shoot weddings, before anybody's seen any photos that I've done, always get people telling me like, oh, you're a fantastic photographer. You're great at what you're doing. And I'm like, you have no idea if I am or not. I could be getting a bunch of garbage. But the reason that people say that is because of the energy that I bring to shooting weddings. I'm constantly moving around, trying to find different angles. And I mean, for senior shoots, I do the same thing, or just regular portrait shoots. If I'm outside, it's really easy if you go to the same spot, or if you shoot in studio the way that I do, to shoot things the same way over and over, or go to the same spots and do the same kind of composition with every client that you have. Yep. And something that's really important is to always be experimenting, not just a little bit, but like try really different angles, try moving around. If you're hopping around and seeing different stuff, sometimes even on weddings and stuff, I'll have a second shooter that got a shot that is so much better than the shot that I was lining up because they happened to be at a different angle that I wouldn't have thought of because they were trying to stay out of my way. Mm-hmm. And had I been moving around in different kinds of ways when doing more pose stuff, I might've caught those moments and those angles that look really cool and really impressive. So just making sure that you don't get yourself stuck in a mental rut, that tends to be something that happens as you're progressing and becoming a bit more advanced. If you're getting variety, good on you. But once you're getting variety, start making sure that your variety actually is a variety for you in your style of shooting. Don't just go for the shots that you know are going to work all the time. Get a few of those, but then try something new every shoot that you do.
Absolutely. And that's not just for the client either. That's for your own sanity, because if you do the same thing every time, you're going to get just so sick of your own photography and you're going to get burnt out. So experimenting, that's where the fun comes in as well. Like, get those safe shots and then experiment and see what else you can do. And a lot of times you can find really cool depth and these really creative shots that, you know, make you look like some kind of photographic genius because you had a few moments to like experiment and have fun and try again. And those a lot of times are the photos that stand out the most and make you look different, because everybody can just sit there and take a portrait, you know, from torso to head, like that. There's not a whole lot of creativity in that, but you know, when you find some kind of interesting juxtaposition, there's a hard word for Nick. Like if you're at a wedding, getting flowers and then have them severely out of focus and have your bride or whatever, you know, just finding those interesting compositions can be a lot of fun and people love it.
Totally.
So another thing, like this is more in the post-processing side of things, but another thing that I see wrong all the time, not necessarily wrong, but it's kind of one of those things that is not the most flattering for portraits, is the underexposed portrait. And it happens a lot when people are shooting in like an aperture priority mode or something and not properly setting their exposure compensation. But when you get a portrait and you underexpose the skin just a little bit, it doesn't take very much. It reveals every single blemish in the skin, especially if you're combining that with not retouching. It's a really brutal combination because not only are all those blemishes visible, but then you don't get rid of them.
Yeah.
So, there's just something about making sure you expose the skin properly, either with ambient light or flash. It doesn't really matter. But just getting it bright enough and maybe just a tiny bit brighter than it is in real life. Because when you do that, it just cleans up the skin. It cleans up the complexion, gets rid of blotchiness. So yeah, that underexposed portrait, that's one of those things that I see all the time in portfolio reviews, and it can really be a killer.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, to the extent that, you know, whenever I'm shooting in studio, I use a light meter when I'm setting everything up. And when I'm metering my lights for my initial setup, I will take whatever that meter point is and make sure that I'm either overexposing by opening up slightly more than what it's saying on my camera, or I will power them up just a little bit more to just get a little bit of overexposure. Because even if the model is somebody that's like really experienced and, you know, is a natural beauty, everybody has texture on their face. And if you overexpose just a little bit, even the slightest bit of doing that is going to take away so many blemishes and things that
crazy.
You're mm-hmm. no longer going to have to take care of in post-processing. Especially if you aren't super good in Photoshop. I personally, being the retouching snob that I am, I would rather see somebody not retouch if they have no idea what they're doing than trying to retouch and plasticize faces and just, you know, using a brush that is the size of a person's cheek and then just kind of generally painting skin tone over that. It looks so bad. I mean, number one advice, take a retouching course of some sort. I have a great one on improved photography, plus from what I've heard from other people. But retouching is really important. But if you don't know how to, just slightly overexposing and then not retouching is going to do you wonders in comparison to, say, if you were to underexpose and then do a bad job retouching, or even a good job. I mean, it's a pain to have to retouch when somebody's been underexposed.
Yeah, when people first find the adjustment brush in Lightroom, especially if they're a portrait photographer, the first thing they do is they take the sharpness slider all the way to the left, clarity slider all the way to the left, and then they paint that over the skin, and then you get, you know, plastic Barbie person where they have zero pores, zero. So here's a tip. If you're not really great with retouching and like maintaining pores and stuff, just get rid of blemishes with the spot removal brush and let it go at that.
And make sure that spot removal brush is just barely bigger than the blemish itself. Don't go over a huge portion of the face with it either.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you have natural creases under eyes and or, you know, next to the mouth and under the nose, like, don't completely get rid of stuff like that. Otherwise their face just doesn't look right. So another tip is that you can take that spot healing brush or spot removal tool or whatever, I get them all mixed up, and just lower the opacity on it. That way you're downplaying that line or that crease or that wrinkle, but not completely getting rid of it. That way, you know, you have a face that still looks like a face rather than plastic mannequin doll.
Yeah. Something that I see a lot of people doing when they're first learning retouching is especially, they will call it bags under the eyes, but it's just the general structure of the bone. Yeah. It's where the bone, there's a little gap between where the bone of the eye socket meets the actual eye, and you have a natural bit of a crease that happens there. And a lot of people want to get rid of that because they say it's bags under the eyes and it looks bad. Don't. Please don't remove the shape of the eye, because it looks so creepy when you do that. Mm-hmm. When you have just a smooth, flat surface right underneath the eye, you it's kind of subtle. It's hard to see if you don't know what you're looking for. But realistically, the skin that's around the eye makes the shape of a sphere, or at least it makes the shape of skin sitting over a sphere. And that really gives a proper shape to the face. The alternative side to that is I've seen people that plasticize the entire face and then they leave all of the texture of that under eye area. So it's like you have all of these pores and texture and skin that's a very specific kind of skin that's underneath the eyes. And then everything else is just smooth and airbrushed. Mm-hmm. So that's again where subtlety and not going so far with your retouching is really important.
Yeah. And let's also add, like, not over whitening teeth and not brightening and over whitening like the whites of your eyes. Those are some of the creepiest photos ever, when like the eyes are just like glowing like super radioactive crazy person. So take it easy on the amount of, like, you know, teeth whitening and eye contrast and stuff. You got to be very subtle with that. Otherwise it just doesn't look right. And it's better to not do it at all than to overdo it.
Yeah. And as somebody who is as snobby and picky with retouching as I am, I actually don't touch the whites of eyes hardly ever.
Yeah,
if it were something that was like editorial purposes, then I'd probably go in and minimize some of the veins that you see. But I think having a little bit of texture in the whites of the eyes looks really normal and natural. Yeah. And it becomes really hard because the white of the eye is not just a particular shade of white or gray. It's of varying tone because it's the shape of a sphere. So you get shadows towards the corners of the eyes. And a lot of the time when I see people that go in and try and retouch the whites of eyes, they'll end up flattening everything out. And that's the thing that I think sticks out to me, is not so much how white they get, but just the fact that the tone ends up being very flat. And then it doesn't look like their eye has any shape. And again, it's that how a Barbie doll's eyes aren't actually round at all. It's just kind of a slightly curved shape on the front of the face. Doing that can look eerie. Something in general with retouching that I see happening a lot with people, especially as they're getting into it, comes down to sampling. And when you're cleaning up skin texture and blemishes, making sure that you are sampling skin that is from a similar area of the face. So if the blemish is on the cheek, make sure that you're sampling other textures on the cheek. A lot of people will, you know, have typical acne on the front of, or on the top of their head, forehead area. That's the word I'm thinking of, forehead. And they'll have little blemishes on their forehead, and then they sample cheek skin to clean up the forehead. And the pore sizes are completely different there. And it's kind of subtle, but that is a dead ringer that people that don't even know what good retouching looks like will still be able to point out, like, yeah, that looks like Photoshopped, and they won't know why, but it's because those pores don't seem to match up. So anything that's forehead, make sure you're sampling from the forehead. If it's from the cheek, sample from the cheek. If it's around the mouth, sample around the mouth, and nose, eyes, similar. Everywhere that you're sampling, make sure that you're taking texture from a nearby area, which can be really hard sometimes when you're shooting teenagers and senior portraits and things like that, because they tend to have a lot of acne.
Yeah, sometimes they have more blemish than they have skin.
Yeah, and that can become really hard. But even then, I will just sample from the same area over and over until I build up a decent enough patch of clean skin that I can start sampling from that patch. That's that thought.
I think the last one that I have is kind of pertains more to like the candid shot or weddings, or even like, you know, the candid shots when you're doing family portraits and you have kids, is having an eye for the right moment. You know, like,
yeah,
one of those things that I see all the time in family portraits is that they're doing kind of a candid shot, like, you know, the son looking at the father, or maybe it's the moment of the wedding where the bride and groom are like seeing each other for the first time. And one of the biggest things that I see people doing is not capturing like the moment, you know, they're capturing a moment that's around the moment, but it's not the moment.
And right after.
Right. And I think that comes down to people that are thinking about their settings and their camera more than they are about what's happening around them. So totally. You know, just getting in a situation where your settings are close enough, you know, as long as you maybe underexpose it a little bit so you're safe, but get your settings close enough and then just be present and see what's happening around you and try to capture the defining moment, you know, the decisive moment. Because it matters so much, especially in weddings where you have all this emotion and stuff. And if you capture the moment when the emotion is very obvious and clear on the faces, it makes for a very powerful photo. But if you capture the moment right after when they start thinking about something else, it loses all its impact.
Yeah, totally.
So really, like, don't be afraid of taking lots of photos and really be attentive to paying attention to what's happening around you and the moment.
Definitely. So that's something that, I mean, you said don't be afraid of taking a lot of photos. I would say I'm the opposite in that I am extra cautious about the photos that I'm taking, because I don't want to just spray and pray and hope that I capture the moment. I want to make sure that when I see that moment through the viewfinder, that's when I press the shutter and that's the shot that I get. And that's where practicing shooting in manual mode and learning how to light with a flash quickly and learning all of the technical side of this art form is so important, because once you have all of those things down to the point where, you know, it's never entirely second nature, it's pretty much second nature, but there are still times when I'll be shooting and realize, oh man, I'm like a stop and a half under or a stop and a half over because I moved from this situation to that situation and I was so distracted that I forgot. But it becomes so much second nature that it's a very zen process. I know I've talked about the zen in the art of photography before, but really learning to be in the moment as the moment is happening and paying attention to the things that are happening around you is so important to being able to capture those moments, to be able to capture that emotion in the photos. And that's what Nick said. I pretty much just recapped that.
Well, and it doesn't really matter the genre of photography. Like, it doesn't matter whether it's like, you know, portrait photography or wedding photography or journalism or sports or even landscape photography. The moment will often just makes the difference between a good photographer and an amazing National Geographic photographer. It's all about, you know, what is being captured in the moment that you're hitting that shutter.
So, absolutely. I mean, just talking photojournalism, if you have a riot happening and somebody screaming out of anger and then you catch them just a millisecond after the peak of the scream and they start going down, instead of looking angry, their face is going to relax a little and they're just going to look like they're yawning. They're
like, whatever.
And like, oh, whatever. I'm here protesting. And So, being in the moment and being comfortable enough with your shooting and not focusing so heavily on making sure that it's perfect. If you're within a stop to a stop and a half, you're probably fine. Yep. Whether it's underexposed or overexposed, you can probably correct for one way or the other. And in general, whenever I'm shooting, I'm just looking to make sure that I'm somewhere within that range. If I'm dead on, nice. But thankfully, with digital photography, you can push and pull things a little bit, and capturing those moments becomes much more important. As long as you can get within reasonable tolerances, the moment is what matters.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you guys. Make sure to go over to Facebook. You can join us over at Portrait Session Podcast listeners on Facebook. You can follow Connor. Do you have an Instagram, Connor?
Yes, I do. It is Connor Hibbs Photography, and Sandy and I also have Esteem Commercial Photography, both of which I am terrible about posting on, and I have
we're serious on plans the spot for fixing now, that. So you better post today.
Yeah. Okay. I will. I promise I will start posting at least slightly more often than what I do currently.
Good. I've actually been switching over to Instagram almost more than Facebook just because the interaction is so much more. But you can find me over at Nick Page Photography on Instagram. All right. Thank you guys so much. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Views expressed on this program by independent hosts, guests, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views of Improved Photography LLC or its advertisers. Some links mentioned on this program are affiliate links where a commission is earned.